One of the items, of course, deals with the ag specials in the bill, and I see that the dean is here, there are a few deans here, from the ag and from the extension services. So I'd like to come forward and talk about the, what's in the Senate bill. I assume the Senate bill might have a bigger problem for you than what the whole language is, but why don't you come forward and just identify yourselves for the team and then talk to us about what concerns you may have. Morning.
You know what?
I'm Alan Levine. I'm Dean of the College of Food, Agricultural, and Natural Resource Sciences.
And I'm Deb Durgan. I'm Dean of University of Minnesota Extension and Director of the Minnesota Agricultural Experiment Station. Good morning.
Good morning. Whichever one of you wants to start, that's fine with me.
I'll just start by saying thank you, Representative Rukavina and Senator Pappas. The university has a very diverse portfolio in agricultural research and agricultural education. We cover all spectrums. We service the entire state in terms of agriculture. And one of the issues that's been brought up, and we have a portfolio in this as well, is in terms of sustainable agriculture and organic agriculture. So during the past several years, we've established a whole set of programs around those, as well as other areas in agriculture.
Chair, one of the things that we have worked very hard in the last 2 years is to work with the various agricultural groups in the state to help us set priorities, work with them as advisory groups, and we would like to keep the state special that way, and that not to have specific targets or marks within the ag state special, but to work directly with our ag groups, including our organic and sustainable groups, to help us set our priorities and then be able to have the flexibility to work across the whole entire spectrum of agriculture in the state. And I think that we've been very successful in doing that. We've made our commitments that we said we would make last year, 2 years ago, and that we're going to continue to make those commitments going into the future.
And just for staff, I think the Senate may have just put that language in, copying some boilerplate language maybe, or why did you talk about Chair Pappas, that the money in
Mr. Chairman, this is unfortunate that our conference didn't get the information about the conference committee this morning very until like right now. So, you know, Senator Erickson Ropes, this is an issue that she's very passionate about, and I think Representative Bly also, and neither one of them are here. And so I can talk about it a little bit. I mean, I wish she was here. You know, she feels very passionate that organics is a new and emerging area. In fact, part of the mainstream now that they sell organics at Walmart and Rainbow, and that
from China.
Yeah, actually, they can get organics from Texas, and once we open the market to Cuba, they're totally organic.
Mm-hmm.
So there's going to be a lot of competition. And I think the university actually should be flattered that the research is so highly valued by members of the agricultural community, in this case the organic farmers, that they are really chomping at the bit to have that research done, and they need that information. Her argument she just made to me last night was that, you know, all they're looking for is 3%. And that's what the organic market is right now, and 3% of the ag special budget is $1.5 million. I think there was a letter, there was a commitment last year of $800,000, and I've heard conflicting stories about whether that commitment was delivered or not. Some say that, you know, because there was a delay in hiring, there was only $400,000 spent, and positions were transferred from elsewhere, and I told Mr. Iverson that it would be very helpful for us if we could have kind of a detailed account of how that $800,000 was spent during the last biennium. He told me that well over $1.5 million is spent on organics. So I think there's some confusion about the area. We have members who feel very passionate about this emerging agricultural issue, and feel like the legislature, and we did give you in this line item, right, the ag specials, an additional $1.5 million. in the last biennium.
Yes.
Yes.
In 2007.
In 2007. Yeah. And we didn't have a separate line item. It was included in the total amount, but the understanding was that was supposed to be for organics, and we did just repeat the same language that we had in 2007 in our bill. I don't think that ended up in the conference committee.
Dean Levine or Bergen, do you want to address the issue of how much money was actually spent on the what we intended it to be spent on? And I recall writing a letter, too, on behalf of
chairs and committee. We are committed to organics and sustainable agriculture, just as we are all agriculture in the state. However, we feel that when we start putting marks within the Ag State Special of where that money specifically needs to go, is that it will soon get very complicated, that certain money needs to go here, then the next group will want the money to go there. And what happens within agriculture, as many of us know, is that it is not just you do the research organic and the other research doesn't matter to that. It is a continuum. It's everything from strictly organic, it's from conversion from organic, it's from sustainable. And having those marks specifically for that, I think really does a disservice to saying that, okay, this is all that we should be doing there, this is all that we should be doing in there, and that. And so I think that we would oppose having that mark. However, we are not opposed to putting funding and doing the efforts in the places that we need to do in Minnesota. And we have done that. We have committed at least 6 graduate student assistantships directly to organic and sustainable agriculture. We're in the process of hiring 2 faculty positions specifically for organic dairy production and for organic cropping positions. Those positions have not been filled because faculty positions do take a while. And in fact, it's very difficult to find a pool of qualified faculty working in this area because the area is new and we're in competition, but we are sure that we're going to be able to do that. We also have spent additional money in converting the dairy at the West Central Research and Outreach Center to a dairy production system. And we're very unique at the University of Minnesota, and we have great opportunities, especially with this dairy, that we're able to compare an organic system to a non-organic system. And that's really the systems that need to be compared, and we're in a great situation to do that. We also have the most certified organic cropland of any land-grant university in the nation right now, and we're putting one of those new positions in that area. So we're very committed to organic, to sustainable, as well as we are to other agriculture. We're just saying that having those particular marks and that amount it decreases our flexibility as we're moving faculty and students and others into those areas.
Mr. Chairman, Dean Bergen, again, I feel like that the members who are the most interested in this area, and I am very interested as well, are not here, but I think that it would provide a level of comfort and support if you could articulate, you know, what you've done and what your plans are in writing. And, you know, and share with us some of the representatives I just walked in where you see the dean is here. Share with us, you know, some of the challenges as well, and that it's taken a while to fill the faculty positions, and, you know, we would really appreciate that.
Dean Levy.
To get a little report.
Chair and members, we have had a program in organic and sustainable that's been in the university all along.
Mm-hmm.
As in our area of engineering, we're hiring people who are interested in that area as well, in terms of manure conversion and some of the issues that are going to be in handling this, and separating sustainable, organic, and conventional, they're morphing into one another. There are some specific issues around organic, and as Dean Durgan said, we are in the process of converting land at the Research and Outreach Center at Morris for a organic dairy, and also the crops, the cropping position that will be hired in that area as well. The other thing I should mention is we have our undergraduate program is undergoing a curriculum review, and part of that curriculum review is going to attend to organic knowledge in that field of organic agriculture as well. We have student farms. We have acres devoted to organic farming on our student farm. So we are doing this all along. The only reason we're opposed is it puts cuffs around your hands if you have no flexibility. The problem is that this is just one area. Each and every interest group could come forward over time and say, you have to spend, we're 25% of the agriculture in the state. We use the same argument that organic is 3%. The corn growers could come and say that you have to put 25% of your funds only towards corn breeding. That would be unreasonable kind of a request for a university to behave in that manner. And that's the reason we're opposed. Not that we're not doing organic. We are definitely doing that.
Well, Mr. Chairman, just on behalf of Senator Erickson Roep, she's also on the Ag Committee, and so they are very accustomed to directing spending. That's more usual than our more hands-off approach now with the university, which we don't always do.
You're more hands-off approach.
Well, I'm guilty of breaking that as well when something's important to me, so...
And I just want to also emphasize that we are not at all opposing to be accountable. And, you know, we will be accountable if you would like additional information and the amount of money, some of the challenges that we're facing and also some of the opportunities. We are more than happy to get you that information. So accountability is not the issue. We're just saying allow us to work with our groups, work with the Organic Task Force, work with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, and really set some priorities of where we want to go, and also to look in the future. You know, we know that this is an expanding market, and that we want to be able to have the flexibility to work through that. You know, the new initiatives and the interest in farm-to-school programs, you know, that fits directly into sustainable and organic, and we want to be able to grasp those opportunities, but we want to do that, you know, in a more comprehensive way. So accountability is not an issue, but having these kind of marches is a problem for us.
I just want to correct, and maybe I misunderstood what you said, Dean Levine, but, you know, it's the legislative committee here, the conference committee, and the legislative committees that suggested to include this carve out, if you want to call it that. It wasn't a special interest group. I don't consider us a special interest group. I consider us the legislature, and we watch how you spend the money that we appropriate to you. And in the past, and I know maybe in the not so distant past, there were a lot of directives in the Ag Special. You get $104 million biennium, and this is 1.5, that to me is range math again, it's about 1%. So, you know, I don't know what the ruckus is here, but if I do recall, if my memory serves me well, I had to write a letter to the university about how we thought you were using that money, because your thoughts on how to use it were a little different than what we thought the legislation said 2 years ago, too. So, with that, Representative Bly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to, I'm sorry I came in late. I'm glad that you're here. Part of the reason that we decided to get putting that in there was to have this discussion to make sure that you could come and tell us what your view of it was. I'm somewhat sensitive to your desire to be flexible, but as you may know, I've been visiting a lot with the organic folks, and they have some frustrations about moving forward, and I think they made a very strong case 2 years ago that they are a growing part of the ag community, and they have reason to think that they haven't been served as well as they would like, and there's truly an expression of their concerns and frustration, and I have many of them in my district, and I'm responding to their concerns as well. But on a statewide level too, I think that there are they bring a different voice to the whole discussion, and it's important that they are included, and that the university, a land grant research institution, reflects that. And so, whether or not you know the 3% of the amount that we're giving here, or so less than 3%, or is enough or too much, you know, I that's something that can be talked about. But what I'm hearing from the people who are doing the work is that they're frustrated by what they are hoping to get from the university, and I know that they came forward with a plan that they talked with you folks about, and they have, I'm not sure if they've really received a response from that or not. So anyway, my hope is that after they're making a very strong case a couple of years ago, we want to make sure that you're continuing to do that in some way that we can be assured of that and is important.
Would either of you care to respond?
Chair Committee.
Durkin.
Representative Blythe. It is, as you know, a challenge always for us to respond to all voices and to make everybody happy. We feel that we have, Dean Levine and myself, we have met with land stewardship a number of times. We have met with the steering committee of our Minnesota Institute for Sustainable Agriculture. I spent yesterday with our Sustainable Regional Development Partnership and their steering committee. We are working very hard to meet these needs, and if there are people that feel that they are that they're still challenged by what we're doing, we're happy to continue with some of those discussions. I know there are some frustrations with the speed in which that we're hiring faculty positions. One of the issues, as I mentioned earlier, is that all other states are also gearing up to look at sustainable agriculture and organics. Right now, Michigan State is in their third search for a person in organic cropping systems. The faculty positions are not there, and the people that are not there to fill these positions. So we are recruiting very hard to find good quality people for some of these positions, and it's difficult because, and that is why we've made the commitment to have six graduate student assistantships in this area, because we feel at some point we're going to have to grow our own. You know, we have to start getting graduate students into this pipeline so that we can hire them as faculty. And so that is one of our challenges. The demand, the interest has moved more quickly than what we have the faculty to serve them. So we're, you know, I hope you understand that we're committed to that, but sometimes things don't always move as quickly as people would like us to, so.
Well, I think in some ways you're making my case that it's a good reason for us to keep the pressure on as well, because we're hearing from our constituents. So that's, again, why we're trying to urge you to do this.
Chair, committee members, to address some of that frustration in terms of those kinds of issues, one of our very important applied economists, who was the department head and stepped down as department head, that's Rob King, in order to convert his program to an organic program to study organic agriculture and the economic issues around it. That has made a big difference, and he's organized a committee that addresses these issues as well. So we've tried to take internal people as well and reposition their portfolio, and of course you have to change the funding source for that portfolio as you do that. So we've Rob King also got a graduate student to address these issues, and that's how we're doing it while we're awaiting the
Okay. Well, you know, on a more serious note, Dean Durkin, Representative Haas, and I are organic farmers ourselves, and you know, I got about a half-acre garden. In fact, the speaker stopped by my house Sunday, surprised me, and I was making spaghetti with my, tomatoes. I had frozen carrots and beets from the garden. And so I want an expert opinion from you. Should I be using my neighbor's pigeon manure, or should I use my neighbor's horse manure? Because my staff is telling me I shouldn't be using that bird stuff.
Chairman and committee, one thing I've learned at the University of Minnesota, you let the experts be the experts, and I'm not an expert in manure, so.
I am, man.
But I can find you somebody who is. So.
Oh, I think I can find a few at the table. Okay, with that, any other questions? Thank you. Anybody else in the audience want to comment on this issue? Thank you, then, members.
Thank you.
Welcome to the committee, former Representative so-and-so.
Thank you.
And I imagine you're here in support of
Mr. Chairman's
position.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Perhaps, Mr. Chairman, a little bit, but maybe not in exactly the same way. Mr. Chairman, first of all, my name is Jerry Schoenfeld. I represent the Minnesota Soybean Growers and the Minnesota Pork Producers here today, two commodity groups of about 15 different commodity groups that exist in the state. First of all, in response to Representative Bly, a little bit about frustrations,
I would indicate that the university has had its hand full not only with the organic people, but with those from other commodity groups as well, and the fact that a few years ago, all the commodity groups put together a coalition to also register complaints with the university about not taking care of their research efforts as much as we would like to. So it's not something just for organics, but I will tell you that with the two deans that have been here, they've been working a great deal in the last couple of years to improve that situation, and we have greatly appreciated it, and that is also why we support the position that the university presently has in not having carve-outs in this legislation. And Mr. Chairman, you're right. I served in the Higher Education Division of Appropriations many years ago, in which there were things like that. But I can also tell you that they were dropped over the years. At one time, there were 37, I believe. I don't want to put something on tape here I can get in trouble for, but I think my memory, at least, says that many years ago, things like seed grants up at Duluth, the ag special used to be divided, I think, into three different areas. There was a diagnostic lab special, I believe, at one time. There was a special for ag extension and a special for ag research, and all those things have been kind of melded together into just a few specials at the university. So I may be wrong, and I'm doing some of this from memory back from 20-some years ago when I first served in those committees, but I don't want to be held accountable for everything here, but there were many specials in times past, and in a different way, we view this carve-out as making a special within a special. Relative to, I represent the Minnesota Soybean Growers. We have a checkoff. Half of 1% of all the soybeans that are sold in the state goes into a checkoff fund. And that funding, much of which does go to the University of Minnesota in terms of funding for research. And I could take you to any, whether it's agronomy or soil science, soil facility extension, or any area, plant pathology that we deal with in terms of our soybeans, and I could take you back 20 years and show you that there has been a significant decline in terms of the number of researchers in any area that we're talking about. I also represent the Minnesota Association of Ag Educators. We used to have 8 that were in ag education. Today we have 1, and we probably are going to be hiring a second through the university. But that's a significant decline over the years. So diminishing resources is something that everybody is concerned about, and so flexibility is very important. I'd like to mention to you, give you a little scope of what this means to the soybean growers. These statistics, most recently, are from 2006. And it is true that of the total U.S. acres that are in organic soybeans, for instance, there's 122,000, USDA statistics, 122,000 nationwide, about 26,000 are in Minnesota, which ranks as the 21.7% of the total U.S. certified organic soybean acreage in the nation. So that's significant in terms of the position we have in the nation. However, when you look at the total, this is the amount of checkoff dollars that come into the soybean growers in 2007. There were $11,091,000 where the checkoff dollars came in. Checkoff also was applied to organic soybeans in the state, so this is a pretty good indicator of what percentage they've got. $181,000 out of the $11 million came from organic soybeans. That is, I believe, 0.016%. Now, we, therefore, as Dean Levine had indicated, could come in here and say, well, as a percentage, look at the amount that we should get from that research. But we're not doing that because we think that the flexibility is needed. And secondly, there's something else that I think people should remember. A lot of discussion about organic production. We support, through soybean checkoff, we support funds that go for organic production specifically. We also are a sponsor for the state organic convention, basically, that they have each year. There are a number of things that I could identify, and I've got them in the papers here, that are paid for through checkoff funds that go for organic research and organic production in support of that, including marketing that takes place with Japan and other countries around the world. So there isn't a complaint about organic production. But you have to remember that until the 1950s, approximately, every farmer was an organic farmer.
We didn't have fertilizers. We didn't have, pesticides and so forth. So this isn't something new. You can go back to 1934 Yearbook of Agriculture put out by the USDA, and a lot of the things probably would be talking about similar kinds of things that you're talking about research efforts now, only in a different venue, a little bit of a different venue. So we're not opposed to organic production, and I will stop, Mr. Chairman. We're not opposed to organic production, but we are opposed to the carbon, and we think that to have this will cause additional problems in the future because everybody will come in with bills like this.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Bruce Clavin, I represent the Minnesota wheat growers, the Minnesota barley growers, all three sugar companies, the Minnesota turkey growers, and the Minnesota beef cattle. All of them have checkoffs, and all of them contribute to the university research check-off. And we just wanted to be on the record supporting the House and opposing the carve-offs.
What percentage, maybe this is for the dean, I don't know, what percentage of the research or do you contribute to your members with their checkoff to the research effort at the university, do you know?
Mr. Chairman, that would depend upon the year and the issue. If you go back to 1995 when wheat scab hit the valley, actually technically in 93, we came forth with a scab initiative, and that was at that time a carve-out, but the wheat growers contributed over the 15 years that has been millions of dollars towards the research. They often match the university. The potato growers, maybe not so much. The turkey growers try to match. And it depends on what kind of research they're doing. 2 years ago, they were doing avian pneumovirus. They don't do as much of that now, so they're contributing less.
So what you're talking about is if there's the turkey research going on or the soybean research going on, your different groups try to match it dollar for dollar?
They certainly contribute. Sometimes they mask, but they certainly contribute quite a bit to the effort.
Mr. Chairman, I can respond to the soybean growers. Last year, they put in $1.2 million for research, for soybean research at the University of Minnesota. They expect to do, they told me this year, it would be about $1.4 million. Pork producers do about $200,000 a year. It depends upon the checkoff and what they've got. Those are two specific research efforts. But I might also point out that research, for instance, disease research is an example. We had a big concern about soybean rust a couple of years ago, and the university worked with us on that. We were here asking the legislature to help put in a level 3 containment facility at the university, which they did, to help prevent soybean rust, which was devastating to soybeans. But the pathogens that cause soybean rust don't stop when they come to a farm that has a sign that says organic soybeans. That pathogen destroys organic soybeans, specialty soybeans, conventional soybeans. So the point is that the research to prevent soybean rust affects everybody. And the same is true of a lot of other kinds of research there. In the case of pork production, we have had a battle in this legislature for years about manure. But the fact is, that's organic agriculture. Mm-hmm. It's not using commercial fertilizer. So, we it goes across the board. It's not just about one sector.
Okay, any other questions? Thank you both very much.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Bly, is there any issues with any of the other language in the House or the Senate bill? Are you guys working on merging the language? So the only conflict was the $1.5 million?
Correct. All the other language has been merged already.
Been merged already. Okay.
So you have a little difference in what the House bill had regarding that one issue on.
On that one study. Yeah. That's not in this proposal.
Okay. Members, then, Ms. Novak, would you... Could we walk through the House proposal then?
Congress
proposal.
Mr. Chair, this is the House proposal of May 7th. And it's on the long sheet, and it's organized the way that the Senate proposal was, and there are several items that are not included that were part of the original Senate offer, and these primarily are issues that deal with money, and they were just omitted from this offer. The item numbers in the left-hand column refer to the original Senate offer, so if you're following along at home, you can You can refer back to the original Senate offer for which ones are omitted. So item number one was an item that has not been discussed, but we would propose accepting the House position, directing that the legislature intends that all state grant awards should be full. Item number two is accepting the Senate's offer to accept the House position that doesn't address the Pell surplus.
Can we just stop and just know that since these weren't discussed, what's the difference between those two? One, the legislature intends full grant awards. What does that mean? And requiring the Pell surplus to stay in the state grant program. They're the same thing? Or?
Madam Chair, I would say they are not the same thing, although they are strongly related. They are both advisory riders. The House's rider is an advisory rider to the Office of Higher Education that whatever the level of funding that is provided for state grants, the legislature intends that all grant awards should be fully funded and not prorated. The statute actually provides for proration if the funds are not sufficient to pay full grant awards. The Senate rider, again, is advisory and discusses the intention that the surplus money that we receive because of the increase in the federal Pell grant would stay within the state program. Both of the bills essentially do that. Moving on to number five, we're accepting the Senate's position on teach without any money specified. Item number 10, we are accepting the Senate's offer on the Senate's position on the United Family Residency. Number 11, we're accepting the Senate's offer of the Senate's position on the Interstate Tuition Reciprocity Rider. Item number 12, we're accepting the Senate's offer, which is the Senate Amendment A-20 on the Learning Network, transferring the money and the responsibilities from the Office of Higher Ed to MNSCU for that program. The next one, the House has an amendment. Are we going to pass it out? We are accepting the House position, directing the Office of Higher Education to work with small schools to achieve accreditation, and in addition, the House is proposing an amendment that would delay the implementation of the accreditation requirement by 2 years. The next position is number 17, which eliminates funding for RETI from the bill. Number still. Item number 18 is to accept the Senate's offer of the House position, which is nothing. No directive to the Chancellor to review priorities. Item number 19, accept the Senate's offer on the federal funding rider, which is essentially the Senate head note and the House rider language. Item number 20 is to accept the Senate's offer of the House position, which eliminates the requirement for a plan for the use of federal funds by MNSCU. Item number 21 is to accept the House position on the language, the rider that we have on the, using the federal funds as a bridge to catch in the next biennium. Item number 22 also is an amendment. It is accepting, partially accepting the Senate's offer, which is to partially accept the House position with, again, using a different rider that clearly specifies that the total increase in tuition at NYSU over the 2 years is limited to 5%. The House puts the rider in the position that, in the bill that the Senate recommended, but does specify that the federal funds are used to buy down the tuition rate. The next step,
before we go on, this is an area of confusion. Let's talk a little bit about what you're doing and what you're changing.
Madam Chair, on the A48 amendment,
Madam Chair, what we are doing here is to make it clearly understood to everybody in the room that 2 plus 3 equals 5.
Mm-hmm.
So that 2 plus 3 does not equal 8. That's what we are clearly stating in this amendment. Thank you. I knew you would have taken the polite route, so I tried to be perfectly clear about it. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, I'm confused today. The next several items are House riders that the House is proposing to accept, and they're on segregated line item for central office and shared services, and increased funding through the allocation formula, no reductions to campus allocations, and a required plan on how the system and the campuses in Central are touched. On the next page 2, item 27 is accepting the Senate offer to delete the House language on the prohibition against filling administrative and ministerial vacancies in search firms. Item 28 is accepting the House position on that provides a spending moratorium on certain listed items. At NYSU, the next one is accepting the House position on the limit on technology and underrepresented student initiative, but increasing the limit on the underrepresented students from $5 million to $10 million. Item 33 is accepting the Senate's offer of the House offer to delete the House language on a moratorium of new administrative positions at the University of Minnesota.
We could stop for a minute and go back to item 29.
Go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I think that the $40 million is probably reasonable, but when you look at the allocation for the underrepresented students, that does go out to every campus as a formula. So I think your desire to make sure that that money goes out to every campus, it does happen.
Madam Chair, I don't know how the formula works, but I know that it did go out to every campus. I saw the list, but it seems it went out to the campuses more than actually did a better job, and maybe that's logical.
They did $3 million or something, and that went to Centers of Excellence or whatever they called it. For, they had a grant process.
That was a whole new item in the 2007 bill. And, you know, we got to get ready for what's going to happen in 2013, and so we thought that we had to bring some money in somewhere and reallocate it to the campuses, which we do, you know, with language in the previous items here, and make sure the money gets out to the campuses and that they maybe determine how they can use that money better. So, I guess that's what we did.
Okay.
So, Ms. Novak, then on 34.
We are proposing that we accept the House position, again requiring the University of Minnesota to prepare an expenditure reduction plan. Item 35, we are accepting the Senate's offer to accept the House offer of using money for using operation maintenance money for a new scholarship at the University of Minnesota. The next two are riders that the Senate has accepted, and of course the House accepts those through their House language and the native language programs at the university. Item 38, we are proposing to accept the House position on the veterinary diagnostic lab.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes,
ma'am. I thought that on that item we had already been told that the university was going to take care of that. We didn't need to have a specific item for it on the diagnostic lab.
Well, and so I don't see the problem with us having in the bill just to make sure that they get it done. But that's part of our office. So if they really don't care, what's the difference of this image? That's our
Well, we've been getting kind of a lot of pushback about earmarks in the University of Minnesota budget. So
right, but right now we're holding with you on that, Madam Chair. We're holding with the Senate's position on that. So
on the 1.5 for organic?
Well, we're holding, you know, now we'll see what happens. I mean, it's up to, you know, my members. I mean, it's your position. So right now we're kind of agreeing to it with just a little manipulation of some language.
Okay, we haven't gotten there yet?
Right.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, item number 39 is similar to the Minsky. We're accepting the Senate's offer of the Senate head note and House rider on the use of federal funds. Item 40 is accepting the House position, directing the money, federal money, to be used as a bridge to future cuts at the university. Item 41 is accepting the Senate's offer to eliminate the plan requirement at the university. On page 3, we are, this is the tuition limits at the University of Minnesota, and the proposal is to accept the House position. Item 43 is the wildlife, a grant to the Wildlife Rehabilitation Center. This is the A42 amendment. It keeps the money the same, but it moves it from the federal funding to under the operation and maintenance funding.
Okay.
Item 44 is the negotiated language on the University of Minnesota Ag Special. I don't believe this has been handed out. That was discussed a bit earlier in this meeting. It's the Ag 45 amendment. Item 45 is to accept the Senate's offer that the House eliminate its resident enrollment directive, so there would be no directive. Item 46 is to accept the Senate's offer of the House position on NRRI research. Item 47 is to accept the Senate's offer of the House language on degree limits, credit limits at NINSCU. Item 48 is to accept the House position of no change in the University of Minnesota data privacy for investment purposes in this bill. Item 49 is to accept the House position where there is no change to current law in TSEO marketing. Item 50 is to accept the Senate's position on criminal notice to students with an amendment. It would be the A46 amendment, which changes the timing of the notice and provides general directive to for public and private institutions to notify students of potential risk to future careers of criminal records. Item 51 is to accept the Senate's offer of the House language on American-made clothing without the word only. Item 51.
Well, no, I think the concession was on my part to accept the House position.
You watered it down so much that, you know.
We do to the extent possible.
Flies only to swimwear right now.
Got some hostage, that?
The beauty Bali Lollymall amendment. Okay.
All right. Item 53 is to accept the House position, which the Senate somewhat accepted, but we have another amendment on the FAFSA requirement that would apply it only for the biennium and only to Minsky with a report back to the legislature on how it's working.
Okay.
Item 54 is to accept the Senate's offer of an amended Senate position on the Minnesota Promise. Item 60 is to accept the Senate's offer on planning information, the Senate's position on that. Item 61 is to accept the Senate's offer, which was accepting the House offer to eliminate the House changes to the Board of Trustees and selection and accept the Senate's position with one change, and that would be to increase the number of labor appointments to two.
Could I hear from the Office of Higher Education? Do we have any indication from the governor that he's okay with two labor positions?
For Ms. Stanis or the new director, Mr. Metzen. You were in the office. You were in the office with me with the governor when he talked to me about his dislike for me from my language on the Board of Trustees, and then I did bring up, you know, the appointments and the makeup of the board, and I discussed another labor position, and I did not hear him say no.
But he didn't say yes either, Mr. Chair.
Well, that
he
did say that.
He did say he'd take it under advisement and consideration, and the next time we made an appointment, he would take a good hard look at it. His position is that he does not want anything in writing specifying any kind of groupings at all in the Board of Trustees.
I think we have one in statute now, right?
And I had to beg and borrow, and it's not even really one. Yeah, it's begging for that. No, and well, Mr. Metzen, you know, being a good South St. Paul guy like me, being a Ranger, I know you come from those strong union roots, so I expect you to go back there and convince him that this is good language.
Mr. Metzen, I had a provision.
Go ahead, and then we'll.
Okay, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Metzen, I had a provision that the something about no commissioner could serve on the Board of Trustees as a voting member. They could be ex officio. Does the governor have a position on that?
Yes, he's opposed to having that language.
Mr. McElroy.
Well, then you and I are doing good so far, man.
Mr. Chair, I was curious about when the labor appointment popped into the bill. Was it in when you passed your bill on the House floor?
Yes, it was. And 2 years ago, remember, I had a whole different approach to it, and the governor opposed it, so we tried to meet his demands, and we watered it down. It was kind of like an optional thing, if I'm not mistaken, Ms. Novak, when we watered it down, because 2 years ago, we had a representative of the unions at the that were represented in the Minsky system, plus, I believe, two appointments by the AFL-CIO, which was really good and, you know, fair. But now, Mr. Metzen, could you tell us what is the makeup of the Minsky board as far as the background and where the board comes from?
I think we have to bring somebody from Minsky. I'm going to be meeting them next week. I know some of the
representatives there, but I know one of the questions that you asked the governor, you were saying that there's a lot of representation from business, but the governor pointed out that she used to be the president of the union, Minneapolis teachers, Sinden, is that her name?
Louise Sinden.
And she was on there, and it's obviously...
she's our labor appointment.
Senator Pappas, I may have missed your point. Would you ask that question again?
I had, I don't think it's appropriate for the commissioner of deeds to be a voting member on the Minsky board, so I have a provision where he could still be on the Minsky board, but would be ex officio.
Yeah, I didn't miss your point, yes.
Yeah.
That is the governor's position. He's not for that being in
life. I, on the other hand, chose to not torment former Representative McElroy, although some of the things he did to me as chief of staff, I should have, but I didn't. Because I'm a pretty big guy when it comes to not getting back at people. Thank you, then,
Mr. Chairman. Yes. I'm not. I like Mr. McElroy. I'm not trying to get back at him.
Oh, I never. No, I would say I should, but I wasn't saying you.
I just think it's a conflict of interest.
You've been away from the range now for a generation. Otherwise,
right.
You'd
so
be doing the same thing.
I don't do that stuff.
Okay, Paul. You're still a ranger. Can't get that on. You can take a person off the range, you can't take the range out of the person. Okay, Ms. Nolbeck.
Mr. Chairman, on page 3, item 63, we are accepting the Senate's offer, which would be no change in current law to the Centers of Excellence. And item 64, we are accepting the Senate's offer with their amendment on the labor market data review. Item 65, we are again accepting the Senate's offer of eliminating the tuition guarantee from Minsky. Item 66, we are accepting the Senate's offer to take the University of Minnesota scholarship language from the House. Item 67 is changes to the region selection process. The House is accepting the Senate's offer of House original offer, which are the Senate changes. And figure that out. Accepting the Senate's position. On page 4, item 68, we are accepting the Senate's offer to eliminate the tuition guarantee of from the U of M. We are accepting the Senate's offer on item 69, which is to eliminate the safety officer survivor scholarship for reciprocity stage. Item 72, we don't have an offer on because this has not been discussed. It's the teacher, the Senate's position in teacher education reports. Item 73, we are accepting the Senate's offer, which is the House language on the Aviation Training Center sale, which is also in the Bonding Conference Committee. And on item 75, we are accepting the Senate's offer on the oral health care practitioners with an additional requirement that by 2013 there will have to be a new DDS program for dentists in rural Minnesota, which will place graduates of the program in rural Minnesota.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Madam Chair.
I think that's that last item, I think that's an excellent suggestion. Who are you requiring to do this?
I'm leaving it open to the Minsky system or the University of Minnesota. The University of Minnesota was quick to copy the Minsky model to have a dental practitioner, mid-level, or I think I accidentally referred to it as a medieval oral practitioner. But in any event, I thought, well, if they could find the money to, all of a sudden, I think Mr. Sarah paid $850,000 a year for that program, and Minsky's found money for the oral health practitioner, maybe one of those systems can find some money to actually train some more dentists who will then locate in rural Minnesota, because that's the issue. You know, I don't have a problem with the whole concept that Senator Lynch is promoting or now the universities and the dentists. But I do have a problem, and I'm fearful that we end up with, you know, just practitioners and no dentists in rural Minnesota. And so that would be my offer. I'm probably going to...
Well, Mr. Chairman, on your other issue about family practice doctors, the whole point of our funding family practice programs is to fill the need in rural Minnesota. So I can actually go back and gather the data that will show you where all those people are placed. I think that's been a successful model. And maybe we should look at that in terms of dentistry as an example of, you know, yes, we do need to be placing dentists in rural Minnesota.
Senator Wilbur.
Thank you. And, you know, I know there's a need to have dentists in rural Minnesota, but I guess I question whether they have to be trained in rural Minnesota to entice them to go there and work. I think there might be other ways to get them there, and I fear that the cost of setting up a new dental school in one of our campuses is going to be really a lot of money. I mean, more than setting up for the mid-level practitioners. And so I just wonder if we could have it as a goal, but come up with a program that could include setting up the dental school, but it might also include some other creative way to entice those students that are graduating to go and practice in rural Minnesota.
Well, you know, members and Senator Roebling, I think the UMD model of training the doctors in, you know, rural Minnesota, greater Minnesota, has worked quite well, and then they get their couple years of, you know, training there and then come down here and then end up going to rural Minnesota has been a good model. I don't know, you know, this is just thrown out there as an offer. I might be in the doghouse again. I don't know what's going to happen. I can't dent this one up yesterday, so.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
But I think that UMD example has worked well, and quite frankly, I don't care if it's at Minsky or the university. Not everything has to be done at the University of Minnesota. In fact, a couple of years ago, when we looked at research in general, and you look at something like a Johns Hopkins University, or I think the University of Minnesota is the highest in the nation, where like 98% of all of our research is done at our land grant college. And the next closest was, I think, Washington State and Wisconsin with about 88%. And then you have the top, what I would call the top research institution in the country, it's Johns Hopkins, and they're like only doing 53 or 60% of the research in, where is it, Maryland? Where is it located? Maryland, I think. So maybe it's time that we give a little, you know, a little bit of the skim milk at least to some of our other higher institutions to do some of this training and work.
Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I think Senator Roebling has a good point that the infrastructure to create another dental school may be more than we can afford, but the dean actually did say that when you, it may be a recruitment issue, that when you're recruiting, especially women from rural Minnesota to go to dental school, they tended to return to their rural roots. And he, you know, he mentioned that there were two new dentists that were graduating and were going to be practicing in rural Minnesota. So maybe something around the area that would be a little more cost effective would be what we do in terms of recruitment.
Maybe, you know, a few less trips to New Zealand to figure out about the oral health practitioner could have created a couple of dentals chairs and maybe the Minsky system. I don't know. Here's the dean.
Dean is here. Do you want him to comment?
No, I don't care about commenting or not. That's the offer, and we have to get up to the session to check in. So,
Mr. Chairman, we'll try to come back with quicker than 24 hours. With a counter offer,
well,
you have it in. You know, I think
I had everything I could do. My members were, you know, I mean, I think this is a nice fair offer, and our members didn't think, but we sat through the whole offer yesterday, and then we had all kinds of other things we had to do.
I know,
you
know,
that working your fingers to the bone. We had to be in finance, and then late last night doing this and drafting amendments. I just, you know, I fought all my 23 years down here for an 8-hour day and a 40-hour week, and I'm violating it now, and oh boy. Well, we're in recess then. We'll... Okay. Yeah. When, what time do you vote, though?
We're in session at 12.
Yeah.
And then it's what? Is it 20? What time is it?
Quarter to
10. You think it's
2 o'clock?
We'll shoot for 2 o'clock then.
Shoot for 2.
When that, we're in recess. I think everything on this list actually has been either offered by us or offered by the Senate. We've had some discussions on you know, language and what it meant. And I just do want to, regarding the 6120 Dennis or Dogger, Kathy, where is the...
That's on the next one.
Okay. Now you're not hearing that.
Not yet. No.
Okay, so members, does everybody understand these items? Any questions? If not, then all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Okay.
Okay.
We got a lot of,
then we have another.
We're
list
making progress.
Of, you think?
I'm going to take you fishing this weekend.
Oh, fun.
Yeah.
Mostly the next list.
On the paper.
We passed out those. Uh-oh. What happened that we didn't make copies of it?
Copier is slow.
Copier is slow.
Do you want to again go over the what is coming on this list?
Well, do you want us to take some of the chambers?
Okay, do you have a list of things there yourself that you want to talk about?
There's a couple here that we wanted more discussion on, so we
okay
could do that.
Let's do that now. Go ahead, Senator Beth.
Lisa, we are
more discussion.
We're not copying.
Okay.
We're copying it off.
Yeah, I got it.
More discussion.
On item number... Item number 24, which is on R14.
Okay. And what is the concern?
R14. We are line 712 to 718. I guess we just weren't quite clear with what you were trying to get at here with line 712 to 718 on R14.
712 to 718?
Maybe it was because it was really tied into a money proposal that in which you're kind of reallocating some money, moving some money around. So maybe that should be discussed in connection with that. So that's just what I thought.
Okay.
I can find another
back. We'll
another
come back
item
to that.
There wasn't anything else. Oh, here's what.
What about the FAFSA?
I could do that.
The FAFSA?
The FAFSA? No, we decided that. It's the criminal record notice. I sent it last week.
Madam,
I think we're got.
We got the copy. Okay.
And the teacher,
here we go.
Madam Chair, well, since the FAFSA was in your proposal, in that language we had proposed.
Oh, God.
I think Mr. Hollings was here.
He
might have had a question, so.
Okay.
Mr. Hollings, you want to come up and talk to us about, I think you saw that language. You might have had a few concerns on it. I hope, I thought it was kind of clear, but why don't you just identify yourself and tell us what your concerns were on that amendment that you saw.
Thank you.
This is regarding notification for them members to fill out the FAFSA form to see if they can get financial aid, Pell Grant.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Chris Holling. I am Assistant Director for Student Financial Aid for the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, and I'm looking at the House amendment that was passed out today. And I guess one of the concerns that we have is we think that the way that this is currently worded, we are potentially going to be in a position where we're not going to be able to allow students to register at the beginning of the term. And we have a lot of students who do register right at the beginning of the term. if we have to ensure that they have submitted a FAFSA, we will have to wait to get the record back from the federal processor to know that that has happened. And there is a lag between when they, if even if they filled it out online, it's going to be several days before we get that back to ensure that they've done it. Now, we can allow them to sign a waiver, but I think we all want to ensure that they're not signing the waiver just to get out of having to deal with the process. So what we would like, I think, is something that would allow them to register and attend through the fall. We would like to get the FAFSA into their hands and then possibly do a follow-up during the fall term to say, we know we gave this to you, we don't see an eraser on file. Are you going to do it? And you need help.
Your reporting language.
Mr. Holling, what about the Senate A7 amendment?
That language does away with the particular problem that I'm describing now.
Because I think we're going to have a proposal to do the Senate language with the House reporting requirement. Do you have any problem with the reporting requirement?
I don't think so.
Okay.
But did we already put this in the Senate? We already put the Senate language with your reporting. That's not our offer.
It's in the offer that's coming
it's
now.
It's now the new offer.
Or did we approve it in the initial?
No, we did not.
Okay.
We did not.
Okay. That's it. Mr. Chairman, I think we all have copies now and staplers. Mr. Chairman, item number one on the Senate proposal number 25709. Mr. Chairman, we're just a little bit worried about this provision in the House proposal because we're not sure what's going to happen if a whole bunch of more kids end up going to school and applying for the state grant. And if you say it cannot be prorated, which is our kind of safety provision, then they run a deficiency. And that creates a problem for the legislature, because what if we don't have any money? What if we have a huge deficit? So the reason that we enacted the proration is to allow for that problem. We do have the LME adjustment, so as the reports come in twice a year on where the state grant is out, they do have the ability to adjust the state grant by using the LME adjustment provision. But, you know, if something goes wrong and that doesn't quite adjust right, we need the proration as a backup. So we have a problem with this provision. We're worried about it.
Bob? Ms. Grimes? Mr. Tannis, is he here too?
No.
Why don't you come and tell us how many times have you had to use the proration because you ran out of, you thought you were going to be short?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Teresa Grimes from the Office of Higher Education. To my knowledge, we have never used the proration language. We have simulated it a couple of times, but in 2003 when we ran short, we consulted the chairs and we received a couple of deficiency appropriations, and then when we still were running out of money, we cut off applications after January 10th and we didn't fund students for that summer session that was part of that same fiscal year. But to my knowledge, we have never actually used the proration language.
And you, Ms. Grimes, you've been around for a while. Do you, with the federal stimulus money for the campuses, but I mean with the new money we got from the
Cal
grants and everything else, would you anticipate that? But you don't know how the final version here is going to end up. But would you anticipate that we're going to have a
Mr. Chair,
shortfall?
Our projections in recent years have been pretty much right on the money. However, we do have experience that in times of recession, more students go back to school, and many of those who go back to school have families that are making less money, and so they're eligible for more financial aid. And we have experienced that in recessions in the past. And last year, for example, we thought we were leaving $1.8 million sort of as a reserve in the state grant appropriation, and we basically spent every penny of what was appropriated. for the 2008 fiscal year. And we assumed that that was partly because it was a recession. So we try to do the projections in such a way that we won't run out of money, but not knowing what's going to happen in the economy, there is always that potential.
Mr. Chairman, I'm really sorry. We have a roll call vote. I thought we were done.
I thought
some kind of concurrent resolution, and they want us to come up. I'm really, really sorry, Mr. Chairman. Maybe the staff could go through this with you while we're gone, and then, but I'd like to comment on some of these things.
Okay.
I suppose I can talk to myself here because it's my family. I can't argue with my side here. We know the reason why we put this in there because we thought, my friends, that there's going to be, you know, a lot of new enrollments, particularly maybe at two-year institutions because of what's going on in the economy, and we didn't want to see anybody get put short chance. So we know that, you know.
Well, Mr. Chairman, we did do an estimate of what might happen if, in fact, the number of people filling out the financial aid application increases as a result of the language that you were just discussing. And if there were a 5% increase in FAFSA filers at two-year institutions, we estimate that would cost $2 million per biennium.
Excuse me, how much?
$2 million per biennium.
Oh.
$1 million a year. Per 5% increase in people who fill out the application.
It's affordable.
Personally, I've seen in the last, several bienniums, we coming in the second year for a deficiency bill where we, you know, have to put more money on the criminal justice system. I just soon put it in. If we had to come back and leave this language in, we put the money in the higher education system instead of the criminal justice system, but that's just my feeling. So, okay, thank you. Any more questions, Ms. Grimes, at all? Thank you. Ms. Grimes said while you were out that she estimated, you know, if there was a deficiency, it might be $1 million a year. Which I thought we could come back and ask for in a deficiency bill a second year because we always come back and put $20 or $30 million into the criminal justice system because we put more people in jail. But anyway, Reverend Senator Hurley.
Mr. Chair, but to that point, we probably wouldn't be able to fund a deficiency bill in the next.
That's when we find money for the criminal justice system.
Mm-hmm. Well, public safety is really the highest priority.
Oh, yeah, there are so many people, dangerous people in jail that did nothing to put to themselves, but that's a whole other issue. Okay, let's move to the second one.
Mr. Albrecht.
Madam Chair and members, number 15, the second item on the list. The Senate's proposal is to accept the House proposal.
This is the OAC accreditation for the Barber School for accepting your amendment. And we, to delay 2 years, we're reluctant because we do feel like they should have had enough time. And it's still, if they don't want to get accredited, it's still not going to resolve their problem.
Well,
but we'll give them another 2 years.
This way everybody will have a chance. And then, like I said, I didn't understand this issue 2 years ago, the expense it was for these smaller institutions, and I hope that OAC is going to once more tell them about, you know, and explain to them that a small increase, which I've been told a small increase, but $1,000 doesn't seem that small to me, but if that's what it does, that'll cover the accreditation that these students then will qualify for their five or six or whatever $1,000 program. I think it's worth it for everybody all along. So I appreciate that. Thank you.
Looks like Ms. Grimes wants to come.
Mr. Chairman, one quick comment. In addition to not being able to get Pell Grants, students at institutions that don't participate in the federal aid programs are not eligible for the tax credits. And the federal stimulus bill increased the HOPE tax credit to be up to $2,500 and made it refundable up to $1,000 even for students who have no income tax liability.
Tax credit, even if they don't have any, you can work it into the, and explain it.
Explain it. No, I mean explain it in the workshop.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can explain it in the workshop, that's right.
Are you okay with this then?
Mr. Chairman, I think it's safe to say it would not be our first choice, but we can manage with it.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead, Chairman.
Number 21, the Senate's proposal is to accept the House position, as you suggested this morning, with directions to staff to incorporate within the paragraph the phrase, or some reference to education and general expenses, and indicating that the list that's in the House position is not exhaustive.
I will accept that from you, so number 21. Do we need the vote on 15 and 21?
I can make a motion at the end of the one that we agreed to.
Okay. Go ahead.
Number 22 is basically going back to the Senate's original proposal.
We're not there yet, Tom. On that one.
Okay, 22. 22, you're not there. You still don't agree with that 2 plus 3 equals 5, or what's the problem?
With just St. Paul math. Different than range math.
It isn't. You're a ranger. I told you that. Take you fishing and bring you to the homestead in Pike River.
I think we're worried about what the impact could be on NSU with this provision. I'm totally sympathetic to the with the students, but to not let them build this into their base, and if you want to hear from NSU on this, we can, or we can just hold it off until a later discussion.
Let's hold it off and keep going through the list.
Number 23 is the same thing, going back to our proposal to just stay with what we started with.
I think we need to understand why NSU is opposed to having a separate line item for the central office. And maybe we need to hear from Laura King, and I think we have to arrange. Oh, Laura's here.
Come up, go ahead. Ms. King, come on here and tell us why you don't think that a House position is a good one.
Goodness, there's a lot of paper at this end of the table. Mm-hmm. Good afternoon, members. My name is Laura King, and I'm the Vice Chancellor and Chief Financial Officer for the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. And thank you, Mr. Chair and Madam Chair, for the invitation. I really am pleased to have a chance to talk about this because I think it's important to us, and I hope that you'll come to understand why. We have been working now for 15 years, I guess, to sort out and organize how we deliver services at the campus level and at the system office. And our concern about this language is that it would stop that effort. We, every year, in a conversation with all the presidents, sort out where the work's going to get done and how the work's going to get done. And we have systematically worked our way through the organization seeking to identify ways to take advantage of technology and improve the efficiency, particularly of the back office operations. And frankly, quite often that results in our putting work in one place that's being done on behalf of multiple campuses. And that work is done in the chancellor's office. It's done in agreement with the presidents and to the benefit of the campuses. I think a good example would be our loan collection work. We, at the time of the merger, we had staff in every state university business office who worked to collect loans through the student financial aid program. And in the last couple of years, in negotiations with the universities, they came to us and asked us to take advantage of technology, take the work into the chancellor's office, enable them to redeploy the staff that they had, and we're now doing the work that seven people used to do with one person. This language would stop that effort. And that troubles us greatly because we think you expect us to be efficient and to work with the campuses to get the back office work done in a way that's best for the students at the lowest cost, and this language would block that progress. And so that's our concern, Madam Chair. And we're hoping that perhaps if there's continuing concern about this question, the study that the Legislative Auditor's Office is going to do will bring some comfort to you. We testified with you before that we are one of the lowest spending systems on administration in the country, and I know that there have been people talking to you disputing those numbers. We believe them. They're from a national database, and we and we perfected them, we studied them. Even if you don't believe that number by half, that still places us below the national average for administrative spending. And we think it's because of the organization we have with the president and the chief financial officers and the business officers and all of the folks that work across the system looking for ways to improve operations, taking advantage of the technology investments that you've helped us make over the last couple of years. So we're hoping that that you'll support our interest in not including that language because we're concerned that it would stop that progress.
Well, Ms. King, you are sufficient, and I believe that you are very efficient. I don't understand why you don't think that you're opposed to us having this separated out here.
Mr. Chair, we're very happy and willing and able and have offered on numerous occasions to talk with this committee when you're in session about the work that we do for the campuses and with the campuses. Our concern is that the language would force us to have that conversation before we could make changes. And so it would stop the efforts. We have conversations going on right now with campuses about merging some of their business functions. We would have to stop those conversations until 2 years from now or a year from now if it meant that we were consolidating staff and taking on the work of many to be done by a few. That's our concern. We're happy to be here and to talk with you every
Can you further explain what you just said? Because I don't understand how this line item here would say that you've been doing that, but maybe you're seeing it differently than me.
Mr. Chair, our understanding of the line item is that it controls the amount of money that can be spent in these functions. If that's the case, then if we have a campus that comes to us and asks us to do work for them, we have to decline because we can't change this number unless we come back to you and get the law changed.
So Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead.
So, Ms. King, your concern is it limits your ability to move from one line item to the other.
That's correct.
Move from campus to shared service, or shared service to campus.
That's correct.
I assume that's the two, more than central office.
It's principally shared services and technology, both of which are in that number. You had a discussion just a little bit ago about the FAFSA application, and under one version of the language, that would require technology work. Technology work is not in the work plan. Might result in a staff requirement. And that number is a controlling number for our staff capacity. So our request of you is that you ask us to come here every year and tell you what we're doing and how well we're doing it, but that we, in the interim, aren't forced to stop the progress. Just the regular course of business that changes the assignment of work between the shared services group and the campuses.
Mr. Chairman, I know that the Chancellor was supportive of the state auditor doing an audit of the central office. Why, Ms. King, if you could conjecture publicly, why do you think there continues to be this consternation about money that's spent in the central office versus money that's allocated to the campus?
Madam Chair, I think it is driven by a shared commitment to getting as much money to the students and to the classroom as possible. And that commitment is expressed in all of the debates we have here about resource allocations. I think there is the view that that allocation decision should be made at this table, and we hold the view that that's a management discussion that goes on with the campuses and the presidents.
Any further questions?
I think we're not quite there yet, but it would be helpful to get more information on this area and have a little more discussion.
All I have to say, Ms. King, is, if we look at what happened, you brought up, the technology, the discussion on that, 2 years ago. What happened with that technology? There were spreadsheets that were put out. There were appropriations on those spreadsheets from the Senate and the House. I believe of about $12 million on the Senate side and about $20 million on our side. If I'm just going by memory. The rumors were flying about what the Board of Trustees decided was their right to decide what to do with that money. You and I had a private discussion up in northern Minnesota about what you were going to try to do. And you and I kind of cut a deal. And it was totally ignored. So, you know, this whole trust me kind of deal bothers me because I think a lot more of that money, and I know that I think $5 million or $7 million, I can't remember what the number was, went out to the campuses. Was it $5
million? Mr. Chair, in this biennium, we allocated $15 million to the campuses from that technology appropriation for their technology.
Well, that's right, because we were raising hell down here, and you went from $5 million to $10 million the second year. Yeah.
Mr. Chair, as I recall, it was $5 million the first year and $7.5 million the second year.
Well, because...
And I'm losing track of the right. Years in the biennium here.
Right. So it was 12 and a half.
12 and a half.
I thought it was $5 million a year, but, you know, the other 50-some million then stayed at the central office, which was about, what is that, four times more than the Senate intended you to have in their bill, and over 2.5 times what we intended for you to have. And now... We're back here with just give us the money and trust us. Well, we did that 2 years ago. We gave you the money, and it didn't work out that way. So
that's not my testimony, Mr. Chair. My testimony is that
that's my testimony. That's exactly the way it happened.
We're delighted to be here. We're delighted to answer any questions you have about our organization. We have provided piles and piles of paper to members this year about the organization. That's our obligation. We're delighted to do it.
I'm not delighted to be here this year because of the financial situation we're in. I'm not delighted.
I agree with that.
I don't make a hell of a lot of money doing this job. I spend sometimes 20 hours a day doing it, and for the last 4 weeks, I've had to sacrifice my philosophical beliefs to try to raise some revenue in this place. And I am trying to be as efficient as I can with the taxpayers' money to see that most of that money ends up in the hands of the students. And so I'm just trying to do the best. I'm not delighted to be here. You may be delighted to be here. I can't understand why, but, you know.
Mr. Chair, we share your commitment to the students, and that's why we're so proud of that 46% number. That tells us that we're putting the money on the campuses. If you look at how we spend our money over time, the proportion of our money going into instruction and academic support is the same as it's been for 15 years, while state appropriation has gone down substantially. So we share your commitment. We think we're the low-cost provider, and it's our goal to make it available to as many students in the state as possible. So I think we're of the same mind here. My only concern is that in that goal, we make changes every year in how we get the job done. And with this language, we're concerned that we won't be able to do as good a job as we would like.
You know, I don't know much about technology. I admit it. To be, not only a dinosaur, but a one-celled amoeba, you know, much earlier than the dinosaur age when it comes to technology. But, you know, by our calculations here, you spent approximately $47 million on technology, you know, we can't figure out a way to put what Senator Lass wants on the with all the technology we have to warn a student not to go in a class without hearing all kinds of the world's going to fall down and tell them to enroll or fill the FAFSA form out. Maybe we should buy a mimeograph machine from 30 years ago.
Mr. Chair, our concern with the FAFSA language isn't about the technical requirements. Our concern is the technical requirements are solvable. Our concern is different from that. So,
Senator Rose.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, and I think what Ms. King is trying to say with her opposition to this language is that they want a more efficient business operation, and it is important to them to have the freedom to bring services into central office or move them out and just have that flexibility. And at a time when we have limited dollars, I'm all for finding the most efficient delivery method that they can find. And I guess giving them that flexibility at this time is important. And the example she cited before about how they brought in the loan program, how they may be looking for other efficiencies. If we can take people out of administration and save people in that, we are delivering more into the instruction and classroom. And that's what should be encouraged.
See, any further questions?
Thank you. But this is one of the major complaints that I get is from people on the outside worried about money going into administration and not getting into the classroom. The auditor is about, and I think that's what the line item is about. So I think the other side of this is transparency and trust, and I think some of that is lacking. And that's why the line item is there, and that's why the audit is coming, and that's why both sides want the auditor.
Mm-hmm.
Both sides feel that they're right on this issue. And I don't know any budgets, really, that don't operate with line items of some kind. And if, you know, a line item is not an unusual thing to a budget.
Matt. And Robin.
Senator. Mr. Chair, I agree. All budgets have line items, but they're usually not embedded in statute that require two houses and the governor to sign in order to change a line item such as this. Not when you're dealing with, you know, there are some line items that are in statute, but the question is where do we draw the line in terms of the appropriate role that we think of the legislature. But I can understand, you know, if the campuses want to go to the central office and say, we please take over this responsibility, and the central office says, we don't have the staff to do that now, but we can take some resources. Maybe you're spending $100,000 on the campus. For $25,000, we can do it in the central office, but we have to shift the resources to the central office to add it to the central office's budget. If they're already at their cap, they can't do it unless they come back to the legislature. I understand that as being a real concern. But the main point that I wanted to make was because there's a lack of trust, that's why the legislative auditor is looking at this. And frankly, I think it's premature for us to draw conclusions now, since there is apparently a lack of confidence in the information that's before us, until we have the results of that independent, objective research and analysis from the Office of the Legislative Auditor. They frequently come back with information that is very helpful to the legislature, and we take a look at it, and quite often, we pass bills in response to it. We tighten up language, we do all sorts of things, and the justification in front of the committee is the legislative auditor recommended that we do this. I know at least one or two bills came through Business, Industry, and Jobs this year, specifically based on recommendations from the auditor. So I think we'd be premature at this point to do it this way. I think we ought to wait and see what the legislative auditor has to say, and then we can draw whatever conclusions we feel are appropriate from that that data.
Senator Latch, I think this isn't in statute, this $47 million or whatever it is, it's in session law. But, you know, if you look at the bill, OAG doesn't come here, and we spell out in OAG what is for administering programs and for the office itself and for this program and that program. It's spelled right out, and Ms. Grimes and Mr. Michiganis and Mr. Metzen don't come up here and complain to just give us the money and discuss us.
Mr. Chair?
And it is session law, too.
Yeah. Well, but either way, it can't be changed without legislative action if it's in session law, right? And I mean, that's I quite agree with you, Mr. Chair. But we do have OAP coming to us and saying, you know, we didn't have enough money to cover the need for student loans or grants in this 1 year, and we'd like to increase the line item next year so that we can do that. Meanwhile, you've got the people who didn't get the grants because they were capped out, which is, and on the reverse, we've had situations where there's been too much appropriated, and they want that flexibility to be able to move money around between years or between accounts to accommodate the projections that they weren't able to be perfect about. But what's proposed by the House doesn't have that level of flexibility right now for the shared services with NSCA. And maybe there's a solution to build some flexibility into it.
But I would say that we don't spell out where their $47 million a year is going to go in their own. We just tell them, here's what you get for the transfer and shared services, and then they determine what we do spell out for OAP, where a lot of things go. And I don't think OAP, I thought Ms. Grimes just testified that they haven't ever sorted any students, although I know we've had to, when we've had extra money in the achieve, you used it. But we didn't need special legislation for that, did we?
Mr. Chairman, they do have special legislation to that allow them to transfer money if they have extra money here or there's short
maybe
there.
We could
stream.
Right.
Yes?
But not in administration, do they?
No, not in administration, just for programs.
So maybe we can put in here that if a community college or one of the universities wants to cooperate with the main, you know, maybe we can work something out. But let's move on, otherwise we're going to end up, we're going to have to go back and play.
Mr. Chairman, yeah, if we could make it through and then maybe leave aside the items for discussion for later.
Okay.
Mr. Auber.
excuse me, Madam Chair and members. We talked a little bit about number 24. That's the item that the Senate is proposing more discussion on.
Okay.
Number 25, the no reduction in campus allocation. Just kind of going back to the Senate's original position.
Can I, Madam Chair,
mm-hmm.
could the members, or you maybe, tell us a little bit why you wouldn't want to protect the campuses?
Mr. Chairman, I just don't know if that's going to be realistic. You know, it depends what we do on tuition. The tuition goes to the campuses. They could lose money there. It depends on, you know, how we end up dividing the money. If MNSTU right now in the House bill is not getting a lot of the federal stimulus money, in the Senate bill, we have it more evenly divided between MNSTU and the U. So, I mean, I think this is, again, like with number 24, it depends on what we do big picture and how much money we actually have. Okay.
The reins are in you coming in.
Being cautious?
Yeah.
Or being reasonable?
No, being reasonable.
Okay.
We're not cautious at all.
Mr. Chair and Senator Pappas, let's see, number 26, the Senate is proposing to accept the House offer with the change to delete part of the paragraph on the lines that are indicated there. It says the part where we are proposing to delete the end of a sentence that begins, each plan must focus on protecting direct instruction, that's where it would end.
Okay, let me just say for the record, and we, you know, we were trying to protect, we didn't know how to, again, trusting the central, we didn't know how to write it that we were needing direct instructions in the classroom, and how maybe that could be tied well, you know, other services like financial aid or whatever programs would be protected because that's a direct instructional cost. And we were trying to explain that. Or as we'd say, up in my neck of the woods, explain it. But if you want to put the period at the end of instruction and delete the rest through 8.6,
yeah,
we'll accept it. If my side agrees to that. I think we still have the intent, and we'll see how
central office that interprets that. Okay.
Mr. Chair, the Senate number 28 is proposing to accept the House offer with the direction to staff to resolve some apparent conflict between that provision and the language in number 29. The staff have had some conversations about it, and we're not quite sure which language needs to be fixed, but it is clear to us, or we agree that there is some problem that could be corrected.
We accept it in spirit.
Let's move on and jump to 34, huh? Because there's no sense doing 29 if they're together.
Okay, we did have a proposal to accept half of it, but...
On 29,
right.
Well, maybe we can work that
we
out.
We can skip okay. over that one. Okay, 34.
Mr. Chair and Senator Pappas, the Senate is, this is the same as the one above number 26, only it's for the U of M. Ending the paragraph at protecting direct instruction.
That's fine with us.
On number 38, the Senate is proposing to accept the House proposal, however, without the reference to the specific amount of money, and to say that it would be to preserve accreditation. So it would say something like, this appropriation includes money to the veterinary diagnostic lab to preserve accreditation.
Members, are you okay with that? Representative Bly? This is the, you know, the $600,000 diagnostic expense for accreditation, and the fact that they had to have, the veterinary school told us they had to have outside, you know, I mean, state money that they were getting too much outside money, remember, that ratio, and I think Dr. Sarah, Ms. Peterson here, I think Dr. Sarah said they would take care of that, so say that one more time, Dennis, how you would read that.
It would say something like, this appropriation includes money for the veterinary diagnostic lab to preserve accreditation.
In the health?
No, this would be necessary in the operation maintenance writer.
Okay, we'll move that and we'll just have you guys write it, the language, and we agree in the concept, okay? So when we see the language, I'm sure it'll be fine. Okay.
Mr. Chair and Senator Pappas, on number 40, this is similar to the language we discussed for MNSU. It is a paragraph that says a variety of things that the federal money could be used for, and we're suggesting that it incorporate a reference to education and general expenses and also indicate that the list is not exhaustive.
Similar to what you did with the MNSU language.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
We agree to that.
On number 44, our amendment or our proposal is to accept actually the House amendment from this morning. However, without specifying the amount, but incorporating a reference to the additional money that was put in that rider in 2007, that money is ongoing for the purposes specified.
Oh, yes.
And also to incorporate the bovine tuberculosis research money that the House transferred over to the ag special. And in the Senate bill, it's currently shown as a separate line item.
Okay, and... So we will agree to that on principle, Senator Oaks Erickson and Bly. And then we'll see we'll incorporate it now, and we'll agree with our votes on either side if we get three votes to all of these things, and then when we see the language, then we'll argue that that's not what we meant.
Okay.
But we think we know what we meant, right?
Okay. I did find some more clarity on it, but we can talk about
it. Okay. Okay.
Mr. Chair, Senator Pappas, on number 47, we are agreeing to accept the House proposal, which is...
As is.
As is?
Okay.
The students are fine with that? That would be
okay. You know, we're not ready on the next three.
Mr. Chair?
On which one? Let's look at 50. Representative, Senator Lass, what do you want,
Mr. Chair?
It to say? R32 language, what would you like it to say?
Mr. Chair, I don't have the exact language in front of me, but...
We had an amendment.
Yeah, we...
What? Oh, we have the House amendment? Oh, okay, never mind.
But there was a...
Senator Lack didn't like the House language. He didn't think it was inclusive enough. He wanted it up front. I'm more than willing to listen to the argument. Why don't we just go ahead and... Maybe we could disapprove it right now.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The language in the proposed House amendment said that the notice should go to the students who are accepted or admitted at the institution, but then it doesn't say the timing of that notice wouldn't happen until they select a major. And the whole point of the notice was so that they could make a decision about whether even to go to a particular institution to pursue a particular course of study. Based upon that kind of information that we're trying to tell them they better get. So, I mean, if I'm trying to make a choice between three schools, and I might go to this school if I'm going to concentrate on one course of study, but I might prefer a different school if I want to concentrate on a different course of study, I better know ahead of time whether I'm going to be able to get a job in that course, in that field, before I decide which school to go to. I didn't want to see them in the course of a two-year institution, 6 months down the road or whatever. When they're usually, a lot of times you go to a two-year institution, it's not just a general studies program. It might be a more technical-focused program that you're going into. So you're starting from day one taking required courses that will bring you towards your more focused degree. And if it's a four-year institution, you're 2 years down the road. And I know when I was in college, I was taking classes year one and year two that would set me up for my political science major, even though I didn't formally select my major until I was a junior. So that becomes, that's too far down the road, I think. The whole point of the provision was to let them know ahead of time that they should look into the information, the impact the criminal record might have. Now, the original bill that I had proposed said at the time of application, And I listened to what the institution said when they testified that, that's a much broader group. I mean, there may be, they might only accept 15-20% of those who apply. And I understood it would not make sense to require the notice to go out to everyone who applies. But then there were some who said at the time of matriculation, well, the day they show up, for the first class is too late. They've already made a commitment and financial aid commitments and so on. So when it was suggested maybe the time of admission or acceptance into the institution, that'd be a good time because they're going to have that information available for their decision point. So that's where I proposed in our last draft to set at the time of acceptance, for admission to the institution. The suggestion to do it at the major was brought up to me, when the topic came up here in this conference committee as, oh, by the way, they might want to get a reminder when they select a major, in case, they need to look at that. But that wasn't the main purpose of the bill.
Well, I'm sympathetic to what you're trying to do here. It all goes back to what the hell's gone on, excuse me, but this really is a whole issue that irritates me, where kids can't be kids anymore in this country because on a federal and state level we're a bunch of cowards sometimes when we know something that's being proposed is stupid and we don't stand up and talk about it. We got kids that have met in our day, and I'm looking around the table at a few people about my age where things were expunged, that they don't get expunged anymore. Things are on your record forever. It affects people's jobs. It affects their jobs sometimes after the fact, and it's our fault.
Now, I've only voted for two crime bills in 23 years, and it was the last 2 years because Tamar wasn't throwing everybody in jail. He was trying to let a few people out, in fact. But I understand what you're trying to do, but it frustrates me that it's gotten to the point in this country under the last, it seems like, couple of decades where kids can't be kids anymore, and records can't be expunged, and things that we got let off the hook for, and I'm looking around in this room, and a lot of us probably did. Now everybody ends up in the court system and got a record. Some of you lawyers got the problem. But not you.
Not the kind of work I generally do. But I could have given the same speech myself, Mr. Chair.
Could we?
You know I agree with you.
What if we accept the original proposal? How do they do it?
He wanted application. I think he wants it.
I think the last language that I provided to Representative Bly covered it the way I had hoped to cover it in light of the suggestions that were brought by testifiers and by Representative Bly. It incorporated a less prescriptive requirements in terms of what the
is applicable to everybody, the private and the public.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
I can't remember. Do we have a copy of that old? Was it an amendment?
I've seen that.
I don't know if it got distributed, Mr. Chair. I did provide it to the representative.
Okay. Well, let's find it again.
I just, if I could just make a comment. I'm wondering if there's some difference between the maybe the two-year colleges and the four-year colleges. I know many liberal arts colleges, students choose to go there because they like the institution. They may not decide on a major till later. And actually, there aren't that many majors in the private schools where this might apply. And then where I can see it makes sense for the two-year programs, and when someone's going there, they're choosing to go to school to get a particular profession. I'm just wondering, it seems like it's, I'm not sure it's as well placed in the four-year institution as it is in the two-year institution. I just raised that question.
Mr. Chair? I understand the concern, Representative Bly. Sometimes people might choose to go, however, to Mankato because they've got a particularly strong program in the area that they've got an interest. And if they weren't going to be able to go into that program, they might choose to go to a different place that's closer to their home, or a different institution that has a particularly strong program than something else. I know even the people in the Twin Cities metro area, a lot of them go to UW-Eau Claire because they've got a particularly recognized program in restaurant management. If they weren't going to go, they found they couldn't get a job in restaurant management because they had an unfortunate conviction of something, they might decide to stay and go to UMankato instead.
What could you have done? A criminal record to not be able to be a chef.
If you had been convicted of food poisoning, some family
members. That's right, to the wife. If they couldn't be a chef.
That's the theory.
Representative Blunt.
I think in the private institutions, the only three that I could majors I could think of that where this might apply would be nursing, social work, and teaching. So
right, if they got a criminal record, they can still be a lawyer, right?
Particularly relevant.
I guess that I'm not saying that this shouldn't apply in those cases, but
social work.
I'm not sure that blanketing everyone is the answer either. I mean, if maybe there's a way to treat them differently, I don't know, but I guess it just seems to me to be, I don't know, I guess it troubles me a little bit that we're...
Okay, I look at this language and I really don't have a problem with it, but let's pass it off to everybody and everybody can look at it and contemplate, and maybe the privates and MinSU and OHE and the university and Texas A&M or whoever can look at it and we'll come back to it. But in principle, Senator Lass, I agree with you.
Go on to 53.
Okay. 53. Dennis?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Pappas, on number 53, the Senate is proposing to accept the Senate proposal, the A7 amendment, and to adapt that with a report from the Office of Higher Education on what changes they note after implementing that requirement.
Members, is that okay on our side? I think at least it gets to the intent. We'll see what happens if there's a 5% increase or a 2% increase or whatever. Can we agree to that? Do I got 3 votes over here? Okay.
Thank you.
And the future report. Okay.
I'll get to it.
All right. 76.
76, Mr. Chair. Our proposal is to accept the House's proposal from this morning with the A31 amendment that Senator Lynch has.
Stop that amendment.
Senator Lynch, you want to discuss your amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The amendment is an attempt to address the request to have a better idea and have better access for dental programs and practitioners in rural Minnesota. I shared the amendment with Representative Rukavina for discussing with him. I'm not sure if it's right square on the head, but this is our attempt to address that.
Okay, members, you know, I kind of lobbed that hand grenade out there this morning, because I'm frustrated with this whole issue. I understand where you're coming from, Senator Lynch, and I know you've worked hard on this for, is it 2 years or 3? I can't remember. Two at least. And one way or the other, we're going to resolve this issue. But I don't know if this exact language, because I would, you know, I want a commitment from somebody that I would like to just put some hard language in here. If we accept your oral health practitioner language with the dental therapist language, which is both sides are in the bill, both sides are accredited or whatever you want to recognize. But, you know, I don't want a study. I want, if this goes on, my whole concern the whole time has been that I don't know if that's going to solve the dental problem itself on rural Minnesota. So,
did you have some alternative language?
I don't. I have some language, but I'll look at this and we're going to...
Do you want
to... I'm going to just say something right now. If there are any dental lobbyists in the room, if this issue doesn't get resolved here within the next day or so, I'm leaning towards putting this Senate language in the bill.
Mr. Chairman, do you want this language as a placeholder?
No, I just, this is too loose here because it doesn't accomplish what I want it to do. I would like to have some specific language that actually does require by 13 to have the program up and running and have MinSCU bid on it, or the university to propose it, the dental for the DDS program that I proposed this morning in rural Minnesota for rural practitioners, or the University of North Dakota, they got a program. We could have the Fighting Sioux up on North, and then have an actual specific in statute that it's 10% of the doctors that graduate. I think, what do we have before? Is it 96 this year? 98 they went up to from 70-some a couple of years ago?
Yeah, several years.
So like 9, and then ramp up to maybe 15% the second year, and maybe by the third year or fourth year out, be up to 25%.
That are dentists, that students that come from rural
Minnesota?
That would
be involved in the cohort that caught rural Minnesota, too.
That's
you know, so the first year cohort would be like 9 or 10
folks, and then it would be 15 the second year, and, you know, and wrap up to about one quarter or so of what the University of Minnesota is teaching now. So, and I'll try to get that language for you by tonight or whenever we come back. Representative Lynch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Chair Pappas. So, my suggestion is, as we have done on some of these previous ones, is that we agree to accept this. I think that the intent is certainly there and included.
Are you ready for a motion?
Well, we have. Let's make that motion by itself. But we have all these other ones we've agreed to.
Mr. Chairman, I actually would like to make one motion.
One more motion?
One motion. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move item 15, item 21, item 26.
Oh, I thought you agreed to that.
I did not. 28.
28.
He did not? Is he 28?
No, we held it.
Oh, okay, we held that. Sorry, take that.
26.
28. 26, 34, 38, 40, 44, with the bovine TB, 47, 53, 76, with placeholder for some rural dentist language, to the language to be negotiated in good faith. That's my motion.
Well, I don't know yet if I can accept 76, so can I amend your motion to include everything but 76? I can
Mr.
do that.
Mr. Chairman, you can, but I don't know if we'll be able to do this.
You sound like Phyllis Kahn whispering.
Mr. Chairman, I think we should see if we have the votes.
Well, I'm a little reluctant yet, and I would ask my side members to stick with me on the final part of number 76 for right now, because I'm hoping that the signal has been given to these two proposals to come together and work things out, and let's get it done and do it. But okay, you've got the Baptist proposal.
Well, just for clarification, there is a proposal before us for the one motion. But let me just say, Representative Bukovina, to the comment of, you know, coming together and all of this, there have been plenty of opportunities, members. Plenty of opportunities. My door has been open. And what is before you today represents, yes, on the face of it, it says it's the Senate position. But I would suggest to you that embodied in that Senate position is the position of Representative Norton and Representative Tao. Both of their proposals, both of their bills are included. So I just ask for you to consider that in your deliberation. It's a win-win.
For everybody but me, maybe. Representative McFarland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My concern is that we haven't fully vetted this in the House at all yet, either one of the bills. And I would have a hard time agreeing without having heard it that way.
What are you waiting for?
And Representative McFarland brings up a good point, because this bill, I believe, was in a subcommittee, and that's the far... It's never been on the... It's to the floor. Is it on general orders?
Yeah.
Yes, but the legislature itself has never heard either one of the proposals as a full body. Representative Lopez. So Eric Wilson Lopez. I know you got the good sweet name from 2 hours, so let's see.
That's the first one.
Erickson Lopez.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Two names puzzles me.
I had
tried. Well, you're correct. The Norwegian background, Swedish background comes first before my married name. I would speak for including Senator Lynch's proposal here. represent McClellan's concern about vetting. The bill in its various forms on the Senate side and the House side have traveled through the appropriate committees, and it's on the floor, I believe, of the House, and while the whole body has not had a chance to debate it, the people that have the expertise in those particular areas have worked this bill up one side and down the other, and I'm sure the House has been just as deliberate in their processing of the bill as the Senate. We have heard hours and hours and hours of testimony on both bills, the dental therapist and the OHP. And Senator Lynchdale carries both of them to this table, and the same bills are traveling in your chamber. And I would imagine by the time a bill gets to the floor, it's been very carefully vetted with all the committees along the way. I think there's been a lot of discussion in the paper and amongst members who are outside the committees that we should feel fairly comfortable with the bill by the time it gets to the floor. Senator Lynch has just put in a tremendous amount of work on this, and we have two excellent choices in two different pathways to deal with dental specialists that are going to be able to address our dental need across the state, and that is enormous, and I would hate to see this delayed any further. And we also have other works before us here that, you know, we've like Representative Bly's project and on the egg special. You know, we still have language pending out there. I think if Representative, you want to bring different language to the amendment, you know, we should just move forward with the big thing. And, you know, in good faith, come back and look at your amendment. Move the whole project.
Well, Mr. Chairman?
To that point, though, Senator, because, you know, the proposal I made this morning was with that caveat on the EDS itself, and, you know, that's not in this motion, and I got to get 3 votes, and, you know, I will say this publicly. I know Senator Lynch is a very good friend of mine. And Senator Lynch has been there many times for me around this place. And I will say that publicly. And I know how hard you have worked on this and how important this is to you. And I think it's important for the state. But I still have concerns about the actual dentist part of it for rural Minnesota. And so, I think that there has been movement, and I think there better be movement, and for the time being, I'm hoping I have 3 votes against it, but I don't know if I do.
Mr. Chairman? So, Mr. Chairman, I'm looking over my offer, and I'm actually kind of shocked at myself, because it looks like every provision is a House provision. Now, we have modified them, and, you know, so we've worked together on modifying their positions to make them a little more acceptable to us. But I can't even believe that I don't see, maybe pointed out to me somebody, I don't see the only, even the last provision, I'd say the FAFSA requirement is the Senate, but it's merger. It's a merger of the Senate and the House. And even the very last, number 76, is accepting the House offer. And we did agree. Part of my motion is that we are still willing to discuss the need for more dentists in rural Minnesota and to come up with language that's acceptable there. But, you know, Mr. Chairman, I just think we should move forward, and let's just see if the House members are ready to move forward on your own position.
We have the Pappas motion. Oh, excuse me, Representative Slocum, I'm sorry I would have overlooked you. I did not mean to do that at all.
I have been openly supportive of Senator Lynch's proposal, but I see no reason to not take this overnight and let us look at it. I support what your workers did and what you've done, and respect it greatly, but I would really like to just be able to sit down the House side and just look at this. And actually the language that my chair came up with is stronger than this.
What language?
Well, the suggestion that he brought.
Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representatives. Welcome. We have agreed in this, the proposal that's before us, in any number of cases, we have agreed in spirit, in concept. And I think that on this provision, you have heard us say, we agree in spirit and in concept. This should be no different than the other items that are before us right now. This should be no different. We are agreeing with Representative Rukabina in his desire and his acknowledgement that there is a very serious problem, especially or perhaps more so in the rural areas. We are agreeing. And we are just saying we agree in concept, and we heard what you said, and go put those notes down. We've done that on numerous of these other items, number 26, 34, 38. We said, okay, you know, staff work on that. Okay, staff work on that. We agree in concept. This is no different. It's no different.
Mr. Chairman, you know, I mean, at some point we have to start voting, and maybe we should just vote and see where we're at.
Well, members, we've moved a long way today on a lot of issues where we had differences and we both compromised on that, and even on this proposal there's movement and, you know, language that was manipulated a little bit, and, you know, I'm just afraid, Senator Lynch, that, as you said, we, you know, spirit and concept, that if I move too fast on this, I may be a spirit. So,
because
Representative Bruce Cavina
and Senator Lynch,
you know,
I this morning with the offer that I made, I wanted to push people together on a couple of other issues that dealt with extraction and the scope of practice, that dealt with location and one of the major issues and concerns was the practice under a dentist that you cooperate with or whatever you want to call it, collaborate with in your legislation. And I wanted to see some movement there, and I thought the Dental Association would realize that perhaps the train is leaving the station and they have to compromise, and I'm still hoping that can then happen quickly. So, and that really, those things, I don't know where they're at right now. So, Senator.
Representative Rukavina, sometimes the truth hurts. And the fact of the matter is, we're not here. Okay? I came to you earlier today in good faith with an amendment to address extractions, to address training, to address referral process. And I said to you, I've listened, I've been working, and you said to me, oh, I don't know if it's good enough. I don't know if it's far enough. I don't know if I can even support that. At some point in time, we are done. Because what we have failed to understand in this whole entire discussion, more times over today, it's been Lynch's provision, Lynch's provision. This is not Lynch's provision. Any more than it's the MDAs or the dentists or the dental hygienists or the University of Minnesota or Minshew. This provision is for all those people that aren't in this room. They're not in this building. They're never here. We are their voice. We are their voice. We are the ones that have to stand up and have the courage to do what's right. You want to talk about doing what's right or listening to the various sides. If anybody should be frightened in this room, it's me. If anybody in this room should be frightened, it's me. For 10 days in my district, they ran radio ads. Call Lynch. She doesn't know what she's doing. tell her this is a bad, stupid idea for 10 days. In my district, full-page ads in the Star Tribune, the Pioneer Press, full-page ads. There is no evidence behind it. None. We are policymakers. We are here to take the high road. Now, if we're going to fall victim because we're fearful of this pressure, then I ask you to think twice about what it is you're doing here, who sent you here, and what your job is. There's an opportunity sitting before us like never before. We have the opportunity to lead, and we have the opportunity to make a difference for so many people that aren't in this building, ever.
Mr. Chairman, I renew my motion.
Well, Senator Lynch, I'm not fearful of anybody that's trying to twist my arm. I'm fearful of what the repercussions might be for the medical dental services that my constituents and other constituents out there in the hinterland are going to get. So maybe let's just take a break here right now and give us about a half an hour to look at the whole proposal. We'll just be in reason.
Say it back.